Follow the Money.
That's what I always say.
Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Great show today. A lot of fun, action-packed as always. Golf, U.S. Open. In this hour, David Purdom on the program on the tax, the newly introduced tax in the state of Illinois going back to last week. That, and how about online abuse to all these athletes from bettors, sorry, and how big of a scumbag you got to be to do some of this crap that people do. We'll touch on that coming up in about a half an hour. Here it is, U.S. Open time with Jeff Seely. You can follow him on X. He is at Cupmaker Jeff, and the name of his podcast is the Cupmaker Podcast, which is going to be out a little bit later on tonight. Pal, you did it again with Ryan Fox last week, and this run goes all the way back to February. It's got to be all-time good for you, as we've touched on in previous weeks as well.
Yeah, no, guys, it's been a ton of fun, and this week, actually, guys, to be honest, my approach has been different than it has the entire season, and it stems solely of the difficulty of this golf course. And we'll talk about that because, I mean, this, simply put, is the hardest golf course in the world, and this is a handicap unique to all in and of itself, so I'm excited to dig into it.
Yeah, think about this. So it's a par 70, mm-hmm, right? So that's 280 for the entire weekend. And the prop, the finishing score, is 278.5. How many times do we see a tournament where the prop is basically, are you going to be over or under, one under to win this thing? That's nuts.
Never. The answer is never, right? And I think we talked about it. Angel Cabrera won this, 10 years ago or 20 years ago or so at 5 over, right? DJ won last time it was here at 4 under. So, I mean, you think about that. It just tells you how hard. And if you have not seen, if you're listening to the show, you've probably seen some of the clips. But if you have not seen some of the clips of the rough, it's unbelievable. And what's interesting, Jeff Sherman actually sent me a clip that Rory McIlroy's quote was, he birdied the last two holes on Tuesday and shot 81.
Yes. Yes. How about that?
How hard this golf course is right now.
Yeah. So what did you say off air? It's like putting on glass and chipping through the jungle?
Chipping through the jungle, yeah. I mean, it's going to be unreal. I mean, honestly, six is rough right now. I mean, it is insane. And obviously, hopefully they'll cut it down maybe a little bit. But, guys, it is going to be as difficult a test as there is in golf. And I think it's fun, right? I mean, I don't love 35 under, and I don't necessarily want to see 8 over, but I don't mind a score around par. And there's certainly some guys this favors and other guys it doesn't, right? Some guys play really well in a shootout, and guys who grind it out, can tend to compete some of these things a little better. So I'm super excited, but I think it definitely does narrow down the field dramatically this week of guys who can actually win.
Yeah, boy, right now on one of the screens here in the studio, the fellows have up recent winners at the U.S. Open. And, 2 years ago in L.A., Wyndham Clark was 10 under at that time. Gary Woodland, I believe that was Pebble Beach in 2019, mm-hmm, to get to 13 under. Koepka won it in 2018 at 1 over. But look, he did back-to-back. Look at your boy Brooks in 2017. He was 16 under. That was at, Aaron Hills in Wisconsin?
Aaron Hills.
So I'm guessing that's where you want to start this week, is going to war with your boy Brooks?
I'm actually fading him in a matchup this week. He's matched up against Tony Finau, and while Tony Finau's form isn't great, I actually think Koepka's nursing an injury. To be honest, he seems like he's chronically nursing an injury lately, but he's got no form at all. Finau, we at least see some signs of life from. He doesn't look totally dead, and he actually played well here. The last time your Windflicker Open, he's played well in the Open here recently. So, and even last year at the Open, he was T3. Finau's got some form, 31st at Memorial, 19th at PGA Championship, 15th at the Truist. So he's got some form. Koepka's got nothing. So I'm certainly like Finau in that matchup on DraftKings.
Yeah. This course and this event has been screaming one golfer in particular to me for weeks, and I bet him on the Sunday at the PGA Championship, and he's the guy that you want to make the case for, right, to go to war with, and it's Bryson, yeah?
Mitch, it's really not even close, to be honest. I mean, there's so many cases for him, right? The best comp course for Oakmont is Wingfoot. Who won at Wingfoot? Bryson. Who was the winner of the last U.S. Open? Bryson. Majors form coming in, fifth at the Masters, T2 at the PGA Championship, Bryson. When I talk about my first grade model I run every week, just a super simple model, number one player in it, Bryson. So yeah, at the top of the board, I've used some odds boost and parlayed them with some different stuff to get the odds up a little higher. I sent you guys a parlay I made where I parlayed Bryson to win the U.S. Open with the Pacers to win the series 4-2, right? Just fun things like that. A lot of different ways you can get creative with Bryson, but I would highly encourage you to have that be your highest exposed golfer this week. And I for good reason. I think he is definitely the favorite to win in my mind.
Rahm seems popular. How do you want to play Rahm? What's the best way?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking through that, and I think my favorite way to play him is in the nationality markets at top European at plus 400. I can make a case for him in the outright market, but this is sort of my version of the winner without that we see a lot. There are certainly some other talented European players who could make a run, but none with the pedigree, course experience, and form of Rahm, especially if you don't think Rory's going to get there, as I don't. I consider Rahm the number three player in the world right now, behind Scotty and Bryson. Solid experience in both Wingfoot and Oakmont in the U.S. Opens. Eighth at the PGA, 14th at the Masters. So he's one of the LIV guys who's not completely lost. And, you know, you say what you want about LIV, but he's finished at least top 10 in every tournament since he's been on tour. So he's at least got some form. I'm definitely interested in some John Rahm this week.
Are you drawing a line through Rory McIlroy? Are you fading him? Like, what number would you need to bet him to win this thing outright?
20.
Okay.
That's the number I need right now. Yeah, honestly, probably 20. I'm sure that the books are going to need some Rory, because they're going to have a lot of exposure at the top. I don't think anyone will be on Rory, and I certainly won't. If you're playing DraftKings, if you're playing DFS, he may be a good play just for leverage, because I think everyone will be off him completely.
Okay, let's talk mid-tier. We're in the 30 to 60 to 1 range. Couple guys here. Walk us through it.
Sure. So I know it's LIV, but Joaquin Niemann is in really good form, and I'd rank him ahead of everyone else outside of Scotty, Bryson, Rahm, and Rory. So he's my favorite play in the winner without market at 18-1. 18th at the PGA, 29th at the Masters is solid. And believe it or not, guys, the number two player in the field in driving distance behind Bryson is Niemann over the last 36 rounds. So he profiles statistically very, very similar to Bryson, and people don't ever talk about that. Won two of the last four LIV events. Again, see what you want about LIV, but he's winning golf tournaments. And doesn't it feel like Niemann's been around forever? He's only 26. It feels like he's been around on tour for 10 years. I'm a big believer in Niemann this week, so I do like him a lot in the winner without market, and you can play him at 30-1 if you're interested there. Full disclosure here, I'm become an Oberg homer. He's my favorite player on tour now, and I bet him in the each way market at 28-1, in the top five each way market. The alternate way to bet that is to bet him to win and bet him top five. We know the guy, the talent here is undeniable. You watch him hit a ball, it looks different than everyone else. He found some form, guys, though, with back-to-back finishes inside the top 16. His game reminds me a lot of a young Dustin Johnson. Physically, they look a lot the same. His swing looks even better than DJ's. He's sixth in the field in gaining off the tee. And for Oberg, I think it's going to come down to putting. He's capable of putting well, as he has in the last two majors. And if you knew going in that he would gain 3.5 strokes putting like he has in those last two majors, then he would be 20-1 or less this week. So I think it's going to come down to putting for him. I've said this a lot this year, but the window of getting Oberg at this price in majors will be short-lived. Get it while the getting's good. And the last guy, guys, in this mid-range, I never play Patrick Cantlay. He's 55-1, and he's never won a major. I made a really small bet on an odds boost on Cantlay in the pure outright market. But again, I think he's another guy you look at in the winner without market, because I do think he's live for a top five finish, but may not run down some of the big dogs like Bryson, Scotty, et cetera. My only real fear with Cantlay is a short game, but if you're chipping out of the rough this week, that's going to be a nightmare for everyone. There was a time 4 years ago when I considered Cantlay the best putter in the world. Now, that was then, this is now. His putter can still get hot, though, like it did at the Genesis when he gained 6 strokes on the green. Gained off the tee in 7 straight events and with the irons in 9 of his last 10. The ball striking's there. If the putter can get hot, we're getting a great price on Cantlay who could make a run. So those are my three guys in the mid-tier.
Okay, so you had my attention with everybody you talked about. You really need to twist my arm with Cantlay even a little bit more. I would add this, right? If you're going to bet him at 55-1, I think you got to bet him in placements as well, right? Just to back it up, because I don't know if he can beat this field personally, but I could see him making a run, finishing top 20, maybe top 10, something like that. So I think you'd have to add that on top of it.
No, for sure, Mitch. And that's why, you know, he's 22-1 in the winner without market, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a really good way to play him, too. So, yeah, I agree. I think you play him winner without and you play him top 5, top 10. I agree. Even top 20, you may be okay, but he could flame out and not even finish top 20. So if you're going to play, if he's probably kind of a top 10 or bust for me, but he's definitely live to finish top 10 just with his current form and his ball striking is in good shape.
Okay. You're going to hang around for one more segment. You're going to make a case for some other bombs, actually, where we're going to get to the bombs, 100-1 or more that you like. Before we do that, hole in one this week, it feels like it's unlikely. Would you bet the no?
Sure, I'd put a little piece of money on the no. Sure, I wouldn't make a big bet on it, but I think it's very unlikely this week. I agree.
All right, Thursday, okay. We'll talk to you live from Rocco's. We're going to Omaha Thursday, Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern. Special Saturday, follow the money. I thought it was 9. It says 10. What'd they do to me? It's all happening from Rocco's, the Jell-O Shot capital of the world. Join us for college World Series coverage and the best bets. VSiN.com/CWS for all the details and a free College World Series betting guide. Catch us Thursday, Friday, Saturday from Rocco's.
10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time.
Thank you.
There you go. We'll continue with Jeff Seeley next. Paul, can you remember 100-1 shot being this popular?
Oh, God.
We'll ask him about it coming up. We continue talking U.S. Open bets with Jeff Seeley. You can follow him on X at Cutmaker Jeff. His podcast is called The Cutmaker Podcast, coming out later on tonight. And by the way, if you missed the first segment, you can always go back when the show is done and get the Follow the Money podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts, and you can check it out then. But we'll continue here as we get to his true bombs now for the week, 100-1 or higher. And the guy that I was talking about before the break with Paulie, like, have we ever seen a guy this popular that's in the triple digits, or was, should I say, because people have been on him left and right. But state your case. The floor is yours. Why do you like Harris English this week?
Yeah, guys, first of all, I think the market's come crashing down on this, and some places have got obscene. But, I play Harris English a lot, as you guys well know. Mm-hmm. But this is one of these weeks where first you just look at his major form. Recent form, second at the PGA, 12th at the Masters. So again, his current major form is really good. His last event, he finished T12 at the Memorial. Another very good finish at a tough course. U.S. Opens, he's played in 9. He has top 10s in 3 of them. And he finished 4th at Wingfoot in 2020. Again, the biggest comp course for Oakmont. And 37th in Oakmont in 2016. He's never going to win an event that's 28 under, but he can win an event when the winning score is -4 by just making pars. I think he's a terrific ladder play, 40, 30, 20, top 10 and top 5. You can make him an outright, but I think the ladder play is really appropriate. I would make him your primary ladder bomb this week. Of course, I say that since the whole world's on him, he will probably miss the cut.
Yeah.
But that said, the case is really easy to make, and you can see why the market's come crashing down as it has. There's just so much to like about Harris English this week.
Here's the only bet that I have on him so far, because, like you said, it completely crashed, and I missed all the good numbers on him other than 70-1 first-round leader. And this is a guy who has had, like, some awesome rounds in, like, big-time tournaments for many, many years in the first round. So 70-1 on him in a tournament that maybe fits his style, I'm on board.
I think that's a terrific bet. No, I agree. I'm with you there.
Okay, who's next then on the board in the triple, digits for this tournament?
Guys, do you remember a few, maybe 2 years ago, when Cam Young was talked about almost like the next John Rahm? I mean, he was the guy, he was the it guy, and really just struggled for a while. But guys, he is 150-1 and is in prime position to have success at the U.S. Open. The driver's been good in 3 straight. The putter's been great. There's a ton to like here. My only fear would be around his accuracy with the driver, but for this price, we'll take the risk. terrific bomb play this week, and one I expect to be popular, not quite as much as Harris English, but I do think he'll be popular in DFS and a popular bet. But this next one, guys, is sneaky, especially for DFS. Carlos Ortiz, 200-1 ladder play. Has he played well in U.S. Opens? No, but he has experience in U.S. Opens. He's played in four of them. And again, while I expect Cam Young to be a sexy bomb, I think Ortiz will be very, very underowned in DFS, and no one will be on him. Over the last 36 rounds, Ortiz and Young have the exact same driving distance, Ortiz with 10% better accuracy and 11% more greens in regulation. Again, I know it's live, but Ortiz has still finished inside the top 10 in four of the last five events there and 16th in the other. So another guy I think is really interesting to look at. Another way I like to play him is in the rest of the world market on DraftKings, their nationality props. He's 22-1 there. I like him better than Siwoo Kim. I like him better than Sungjae Im. I like him better than Minwoo Lee. So I think there's at least 50 cents of value there, if not more. I think I like 22-1 a lot in that rest of the world market as a creative way to play Ortiz. And again, you're not investing a ton of money. It's a bomb, but he's the guy you definitely want to take a look at, and I think can sneak his way into a pretty high finish here.
I thought you would have more of those with nationality props and some other stuff. But that's okay. How many matchups do you have then?
Yeah, guys, I've got a couple of matchups. We talked a little bit about fading Rory, and on DraftKings, Bryson's minus 165. It's funny because Scotty's like, it's almost $3 against Rahm. And I think Bryson versus Rory is a way better bet than Scotty versus Rahm, to be honest. So 165, Mitch, you said it off air. That's basically a field goal in a football game, right? So I like that a lot. I like Bryson a lot at minus 165 there. I mentioned that I'm fading Koepka. I'm playing Tony Finau, minus 125 over Koepka. And Carlos Ortiz at minus 105 over Nick Taylor. I played that matchup as well. I'll tell you what, guys, one of the things I did bet on DraftKings that people can take a look at, and it's effectively a lottery ticket, but it's kind of interesting. They have these groups on there that are basically five guys in a group, and you can pick one guy in each group and parlay, say, nine groups. So you know me and my parlays. I did it this morning. Pick one guy in each group, nine groups, and they let me. Most people let me bet was 33 cents, but it's 33 cents to win 244,000. So if you're looking at some like scratch off type bets, some real YOLO parlays, there's some interesting ones on there on DraftKings that you can literally bet change on and maybe run hot and win a couple hundred grand.
Okay, hold on. You said the key word right there. I have to bring this up. Last year when I went back and I was hanging at your place and your golf club for that weekend, they put on a buddy of mine, Scott, put on the Dexter Moss Memorial Race by a dog that passed away a couple years ago. And so we went back to the Indianapolis area and we met you on Friday night. Scratch offs, Paulie, are huge in the Midwest.
Oh, yeah, no
right?
doubt.
Gigantic,
yeah.
Right?
What do you think you're talking to?
So, Jeff, how many did we buy and what did we hit overall?
Mitch, that was pull tabs.
Oh, pull tabs. Yeah, pull tabs. Same pull thing, tabs. Whatever.
So, yeah.
Same thing.
What did we buy, 500?
Yeah, I think we had $500 worth. I think we cashed in like 30 bucks, maybe got some Busch Lights.
Oh, my, yeah.
That's not an exaggeration.
Yeah, scratch-offs are big there, too. Scratch-offs are big in Southern California. They're in every gas station and trying to, pull tabs, scratch-offs, everything. Yeah.
We had like a six-top table at this bar on a Friday night, and it was littered. You couldn't see anything. You couldn't even see the table because it was all pull tabs.
Yeah.
We had hundreds of them.
I have a buddy of mine who owns a bar here because bars can legally sell them, and he regularly covers his payroll with pull tab revenue. It's amazing.
I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. Makes me think of the McDonald's game with the on the HBO documentary.
Oh, yeah.
McMillions.
McMillions, yeah.
Oh, was that so good? The guy he had the – oh, it was awesome. Yeah.
Are you going to the game tomorrow night in Indy?
I'm not, fellas. Like you said, I'll be watching it. I'll be watching it at the beach club here and at my club. But no, I'm excited. I'm not going to pay $1,500 for a lower level ticket. But I'm counting on a big bounce back from Holly Halliburton. He has to show up,
yep.
And hopefully we can take these two and win 4-2, and I can catch my Bryson parlay.
Mm. You take the points yet, or are you just going to ride that out? That 4-2.
I'm gonna ride it. I may take the points, but I've got to bet with the guys. I'm out of the points, but. No, it'll be fun. I think we're going to come back and win, but OKC stuff. We all know that. It's going to be a great game, guys. I'm excited about it.
All right, pal. That was awesome. Go get him again this week. You've been red hot. Let's make it continue, okay?
Sounds great, fellas. Talk soon.
There you go. Jeff Seeley on the Progressive Guest Line. A lot there. Wes Reynolds is going to join us, by the way, coming up in about 40 minutes. His best bets, U.S. Open. And he's also going to, well, he is going to go to the game tomorrow night in Indy. Both those guys, Hoosiers. How many of those bets, guys, do you have so far? I'm on. I'm glad to be on a bunch of his names that he rattled off there.
You know, Stanford Steve always has the hate bet. He would bet on Serena Williams because he didn't like her.
Yeah.
So if she win, I guess I have to do that with DeChambeau, too. I can't stand him.
Why don't you like him? The guy's on a total 180.
Yeah, it's phony. It's forced. It's not. It's not.
I don't think it is.
It's not sincere.
I think it is. I think he's the real deal. Plus, I can't. I've won. I was on in both tournaments when he was when he won last year. I won. There was a book that left up when he was making that run at the PGA last year. They left up 46-1. I'm like, oh my God, that's going to be way. That's an unbelievable number. Grabbed it and he won that. And I was also on Matthew Wolf big back in 2020. But it was basically going into Sunday, it was down to Wolf and DeChambeau. And so I just hedged my guts out on DeChambeau, and he came back to win it, and he was awesome on Sunday. So his two prior U.S. Open victories, I've been on the guy, and I've won a fortune to him, and that's why I love him.
Top debutant, Ben Griffin, plus 360. I think they're all playing for second place.
Well,
this
then you got to make it two. You got to bet that big,
at the 70-1 as well. Top lefty, McIntyre plus 250, Harmon plus 350. Where's Phil? Phil 7-1.
I will tell you right now that there's a market that you have to pay attention to. They don't do it every week. I know books offer it for majors, and they offer first round, top five, top 10. It's a great way to get huge prices on some of these guys.
That's some English. You do a little English there.
I think English, absolutely. Yeah.
Top pass champion. DeChambeau 2-1. McIlroy 3. Rahm as well. Spieth 12. Koepka 18. Fitzpatrick 20. See, I take a piece of Fitzpatrick. I don't want any part of Koepka.
No, he's like the one guy that jumps off that list. Yeah.
Rose 25-1. Rose, first round leader, always seems to be in the mix.
Sure.
Right?
A lot of events, yeah. What is he, by the way? I did not look at him. Do you have a number on him for first round leader? But that would be, again, a guy to maybe explore here for top five, top 10 first round.
Yeah. That's going to be great, especially if this if they look like fools out there, is what we're rooting for and hoping for. That video today of the guy with the putting, or just, did you get enough? Is it going to get up on the green? And it doesn't stop, it goes almost off the green.
120 yards out.
Yes. Yeah. That's on X. You can check it out.
David Purdom, ESPN, up next. We'll discuss FanDuel's decision today in the state of Illinois and online abuse is out of control to athletes.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
A lot to get into with our next guest. David Purdom joins the program now. Does a great job covering gambling for ESPN. You can follow him on X. He is at David Purdom, and he is on the Progressive Guest Line. David, thanks for the time today. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys.
Paulie, I think most importantly as well, he reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to partner in Circa Grandissimo and grab a Survivor contest together? So looking forward to that, David. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I can't afford it. They're charging me too much taxes in the other states. Can't afford it.
Well, and you've been all over this, especially today, with the news that FanDuel will begin charging a 50-cent transaction fee, as you pointed out, on every bet placed on its platform in Illinois beginning on September 1st of this year. What was your reaction to their decision just to say, you know what, we're going to rip off the Band-Aid and start then?
Well, you know, I knew there was going to be some sort of action after Illinois placed a similar type tax, a per-bet tax, that they passed over the weekend that's going to charge sportsbooks there in Illinois 25 cents for the first 20 million bets that they accept online. After that, after 20 million, it goes up to 50 cents per bet. The sportsbooks were going to have to do something. That's a heavy levy on them. FanDuel kind of just jumped out ahead of this. The governor has not signed the budget bill with that tax increase yet. I think they wanted to get the kind of the publicity bandwagon going a little bit, saying, look, this is what you're forcing us to do. It is for online bets only. He's not going to be charged for that if you go up to the casino or at the kiosk and place the bet. So that is something for bettors to know for sure. But, yeah, I don't think this is the last sports book that is going to take this step in Illinois.
Do you know how many books have a brick and mortar then where they're not going to get dinged for a fee when bettors go up to it. Circa for sure, right? DraftKings, mm-hmm. obviously, next to Wrigley. Beyond that, I don't know. Do you know how many books have an actual book, brick and mortar?
Yeah, FanDuel has one at the United Center where the Bulls play, I believe. There are several others. I don't know exactly how many of them, but there are several others.
What? How many bettors do you think? It's a hard question. But how many bettors do you think will say, well, okay, I'll continue to bet there. It doesn't bother me. And Mitch used the analogy earlier of gas is 70 cents cheaper or whatever across the street.
Yeah, I think there will be some pushback, but for the recreational players, they may not even notice it. They're being added on there. They're just looking to fire away at their parlays. I saw an interesting stat from FanDuel that they gave to Wall Street Journal that 90% of their same game parlays are for $30 or less, and 60% of them are for $5 or less. So these are small money people. While that tax is a lot more on them, I'm not sure they're really price sensitive and will be looking at it very closely.
Great information. Mm. Good points as well.
Are you surprised by that?
No, I always think that we, in our circles, we hear from the professional bettors and the avid bettors that bet, you know, a little bit more. But there are so many. For every one of those guys that talks to us, there are probably 100 of the other guys that are small players.
Okay. You've been doing an excellent job following this and these social media warriors here that's out of control. You can just take it away. I'll set you up here. But you've been several examples. McCullers got death threats for the Astros. There was Gabby Thomas, who a guy heckled her and then bragged about it that she lost, and then he cashed a parlay as a result. And the stuff that Pegula shared with some of the tweets and messages she gets from, you know, dog dying, I'm glad you know, something happens to your kid, your family, whatever, I hope you get cancer. This stuff is off the charts. You've been covering it. What do you think about what books should do here and what action they should take with these threats to athletes?
Well, I think it's a combination. There needs to be some kind of communication between the sports books, the social media companies who have all these people's information, and the regulators and law enforcement. You know, my issue with this right now is that there's just not much deterrence, right? You can go on there with your anonymous account and you can fire out just some ridiculous, horrific things to people, and there's not much deterrence. The guy that was threatening McCullers and his family, it turned out, was an angry bettor. Admitted that he was intoxicated when he fired off these things about finding his children, and he was located overseas. The Houston the police department tracked him down, but that may be the end of it. We may never hear his name. We may never see any charges. And so I just wish there was more deterrence in this space right now.
Yes.
Totally agree.
Yes. And good job by FanDuel. What they did to the guy who heckled Gabby Thomas?
Yeah, FanDuel took quick, swift action. The guy kind of told on himself, put the video of him heckling Gabby Thomas, who is an Olympic sprinter, gold medal winner at a recent what they call Grand Slam track event in Philadelphia. He was just heckling her and heckling her. And then he said, hey, I heckled her so much that I made her lose, and that made me win my parlay. And he was kind of bragging about it. And FanDuel looked up his account because he put his betting slip on the parlay right there on his tweet and looked it up and banned the guy.
I wonder how much worse it's gotten since legalized sports betting in 2018, right? Because this was always a thing, David, right, with fantasy mm-hmm. football and
yes.
fantasy sports
yeah.
way before this, right?
Well, yeah, I think it's definitely increased as people get used to this new availability of sports betting. And I don't want to downplay the significance of we had the rise of social media alongside the rise of the legalization of sports betting. And those two combinations have been toxic.
Absolutely. The quote from Pegula about every person on tour deals with it. It's so bad. I get told my family should get cancer and die from people on here, social media, on a regular basis. And then she shared them from all these people about what they're saying if she happens to lose a match.
It's terrible. And, you know, you wonder how many of these people are doing this to try to get in these athletes' heads and then betting against them. We had an example of that back in about 2017, 2018, where a young kid was threatening, including New England Patriots players, before they played the Rams in the Super Bowl. Awful, vile stuff. And he actually ended up getting charged, which I thought was finally we're getting some sort of deterrence going on here. But this is just rampant, and it's sad.
Well, especially with tennis, too. And actually, my wife and I were watching the men's championship on Sunday, and we were talking about how easy it would be for fans or bettors, whatever, to get close and then to heckle or to do something even worse than that, because they're right on the court, David. And, oh, by the way, like, who are these tennis players with? They have their coach and, like, how many other people, right? So it's, like, it's super easy to probably get there and yell at them or do whatever it might be, and you're going to get their attention.
Oh, and we got the U.S. Open in golf coming up, which I would think it would be extremely easy to do it there. When we've seen at the Tahoe, the celebrity contest golf tournament a couple of years ago, a guy yelled in the backswing of Marty Fish's drive on 18 when he was tied with Steph Curry. The guy turned out had a bet on Steph Curry. So when Fish pulled back to hit his drive, the guy yelled in his backswing, and Fish sent it into the woods, and Steph went ahead and won. So this can happen, and it's inappropriate, and I just wish people would kind of grow up.
Yep, well said. I mean, you cover it all as well. Wondering what were your thoughts on the Colorado Rockies, and your tweet is just unbelievable that they've been favored five times, I think, now in the last 232 games.
I was looking today at BetMGM statistics. They sent out about their betting splits on to win the National League West. The Rockies have attracted more bets than the Dodgers to win the National League West.
Oh, man. Oh, come on.
Yeah, so before we start talking about how sophisticated and where the bettors are, there you go.
Yes, right.
Oh, yeah, good call.
All right, you can follow David on X. He's at David Purdom. Does a great job for ESPN and ESPN.com. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
Yeah, well done. There you go. Yep. He's on the progressive guest line.
That's another good angle, too. I want to win my bet, and I'm going to yell in a backswing.
I remember that tournament. Curry was going crazy when he won it.
Yeah. And then you had, I think it was Hendricks, too, stuff he was dealing with. But the Pegula stuff. I mean, this is on Instagram now. These bettors are insane and delusional. And I don't allow DMs. And I try to remember when to shut my comments off during tournament stuff, but they always find a way. And then she shared all these messages and what people say to her when she loses. And it's just one after another of just anything you can imagine. But the thing that got me was, you know, here's one, just quit playing, enjoy your father's money, you're the most useless top 10 player ever, you know, and then it's something about the dog and... But then her comment about every person on the tour goes through this. You're going to be told, I hope you get cancer and die at some point on social media.
A lot of low-life, scumbag, bottom feeders, Paulie, out there. And the gambling and the fantasy stuff obviously makes them go even more extreme. And social media just, you know, ties it all together then. So much easier now than that. I'm sure that some sports, some big athletes who don't even check their mentions
right.
or their DMs. I'm sure, you know, like what does, name any quarterback in the league, right? What do you think it looks like after a bad game on a Sunday if they would actually go and pay attention to it?
Yeah. Yep.
So up next, we'll get into updated numbers for the Conn Smythe. Big game last night for Paulie's ticket and today's Major League Baseball card. Books, I think, are begging us to bet his prop tonight, which usually cannot be a good thing.
This is Follow the Money on VSEN.
Updated numbers here. After Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final last night, Paulie, a complete pummeling at the hands of the Panthers over the Oilers. That was one of the worst hockey games I've ever watched, and I shut it off early. That's how bad it was, and they just couldn't stop calling penalties and guys to the box, and it was just a complete mess. And as you know, people were pointing out on social media, they were getting dog-walked last night. That's spot on. And
they lose every fight, too. Oh man.
It's just
to add insult to injury.
Yep,
trying to start stuff, trying to be tough guys, and then getting their face caved in.
I thought the Panthers to win the series before yesterday was a bit cheap. I still think it's cheap right now.
Yeah.
What's going to be the plan of attack here in goal for Edmonton?
He doesn't know what he's going to do in game 4. Although Knobloch said he's not going to pin the lot of blame on what happened with most of the goals with Skinner.
That's fine. I just, Florida has scored 5+ goals 11 times so far in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're potent. They're an absolute
machine.
Yes. What would you do?
I'd probably play Skinner one more time.
You are correct, though, about you are hit over the head with this about the games 4-7 of a series.
Oh,
yeah. He becomes a different goalie.
Sure.
So, plus, it's also pretty much a season on the line. I'm not saying that there's still a chance, but I don't like their chances down 3-1. Not against this team.
No, neither do I.
And how they're playing, and then the adjustments that they made in shutting down Draisaitl and not getting a shot on goal, and to take them out 6-1, no problem, and just how many different guys can hurt you, beat you, and score. And if you're going to do this stupid stuff with the penalties again and go to the box, they're going to make you pay, and there were 3 power play goals in that one. So I would start Skinner and have him on a short leash. And then if you lose and he doesn't play well, if he finishes the game, it's a no-brainer with the season on the line.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how I have to tack it.
Okay, so what you said a minute ago, right? It's coming from every angle, from a ton of different guys for Florida in terms of goals scored. You saw it last night, Reinhart, Verhaeghe, Marchand, Bennett, right? A lot of these guys were involved. So Bennett, the story continues, and he's the short shot now to win the Conn Smythe.
He moved again while we were on the air. Now he's plus 140 at DraftKings. Okay, this keeps moving. And then Bob moved ahead of Marchand as well since we've been on the air.
I think, it's the playoffs in totality.
Yep.
So people are going to make the case for Bobrovsky if it goes similar to what it was like last night and they win the series and he's going to only allow, one or two goals potentially here. I get it. Games 1 and 2 were totally different. But I think people will make a case for him, and he probably should be ahead of Marchand right now. But Marchand's also good. It's going to be recency bias. I hope that doesn't really play into it.
That's an overreaction. He got as low as 4-1.
Yeah.
That's too much.
Right.
Too much of a move.
But so we talked about this before the series started. And, when I brought up the idea of Sam Bennett most goals in the series, you said, and it was Jonathan Davis as well, well, if you're going to do that, just bet Sam Bennett to win the Conn Smythe at 30-1.
Yep.
I didn't do that. But after game one, I did bet him at 18-1.
And now it's not, you can't do it in Nevada.
Yeah, after the I haven't seen it anywhere now in a while.
Yep.
But plus one, he needs to be the short shot, probably with a bullet here. And then you can make the pecking order anyway after that. And books are going to protect themselves on McDavid in case they come back and win. He's the most likely guy to take it down then for Edmonton. But Marchand's been a great story. And if you're betting his goal props, man, you're cashing in left and right. Same thing with Bennett. But it has to be one of those three probably right now, I would say. Right there, Marchand has to be ahead of Barkov, don't you think?
Yes.
Because if you factor in again how impactful his goals have been the last two games, you can't deny that.
It's either going to be Bennett or Bob. Unless there's a couple shutouts or, Marchand has another two-goal game and Bennett doesn't do anything. But that's still a little aggressive because Bennett leads everyone in goals in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you're right about it. It's the award for the entire playoffs. So, it goes back to what I said earlier at the top of the show. And reading stuff about, wow, Bob's been so great, and he only gave up one goal, and look at all the saves. How do you treat the first couple games? He allowed 4 goals in game one and 4 goals in game two. Some people still think, hey, he played great, even though he gave up 8 goals, but look at all the saves and look at the high danger chances and the chances that Edmonton generated. I don't know how many people will see it that way. I don't know. That's tough. Maybe they do. And maybe they point to how well he played in the first couple series as well. Or does Bennett win out for all the goals and how great he's been and hasn't had a stinker, unlike Bob. But the thing that helps Bob is there's so many guys that can score and have scored for Florida as they've set the record with what they've done on the road and how many guys have contributed and with points and goals. That's the thing that helps Bob's case. But I think the Marchand thing is too aggressive, and I think now we're only down to one guy. If Edmonton comes back and wins this, it's got to be McDavid after Draisaitl couldn't even register a shot on goal.
Yeah. I'd throw out Corey Perry as a guy because...
And he moved to 500-1 after he was 300.
The guy's been awesome.
Yeah. And he had the big goal in game two, I know.
Hasn't he had a say in almost every one of these games?
Yeah.
So I don't know, but it's...
Again, shouldn't be the same odds as Stuart Skinner.
No, my God. And so this is the reason why... So I bet Skinner at 300-1, and it was after the Golden Knights series when he won on back-to-back shutouts to clinch that series. And then he had a really good series against Dallas, right? And then you were telling me it's live, others as well. But when I looked at his numbers and what they could potentially be for the length of the playoffs against other goalies who won the Conn Smythe, I was like, he's not going to win because he's only going to have a maximum of, what was it, like 10 wins overall in the playoffs? And every other guy basically who won it had like 15 or 16 wins in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And their goals against and their save percentage, they were absolutely lights out. His were nice, but they were never competing with those previous goalies. And that's what I think other voters might do with Bobrovsky.
Yeah.
They'll look at his overall playoff numbers to compare them to previous guys and say, yeah,
well,
you know.
So this guy works for the Panthers, and he tweets after the game, I don't want this to get lost, even though we won 6-1. Bob was great again. Per NHL stats, his 116 saves through three games are tied for the second most through three games of a cup final. The first response is he wasn't great in game one or two. Guy comes back, yes, he was. Another response is this is Conn Smythe stuff. And it just goes back and forth about who should be leading, who should be the favorite, and who's going to win the award.
Well, but doesn't it need to be, I mean, when you stop and think about it, though, right? Just gut reaction. Who's been the best player for the Panthers in the playoffs?
Bennett.
I would agree.
Yes.
And he has to be the short shot or the favorite, whatever you want to say here, to win the award. And if it could, if he scores another goal like in game four and they win, I really don't even care if Bob has like a shutout.
Is he too low? Now plus 140? Is it getting...
No, I don't
think
he is.
You don't think so?
No.
I'm glad they adjusted it and moved Marchand back up. I mean, to get to beat a 4-1.
Yeah.
Where he just, you know... other than a couple big... one big goal against Toronto. You know, he was great in, so far in this series. But other than Toronto, where's he been? Early on in the playoffs. Yeah. But that's...
What was Marchand before the cup began?
Oh, good question.
Because it was... I think it was...
90? 100? Or was he 90... after game one, I think 90. I could be wrong, though. But
did I have it yesterday in weekend observations? Like, we're all going to hate ourselves for not betting him?
Yeah, you did.
To win the Conn Smythe, and he was as low as 20-1 yesterday?
Yeah.
But I think it was 30-1 before the game on Friday night, which was no... I mean, a lot had to happen for him in game two to actually get this juice going here.
Well, plus 75 to 1. Plus, we got several tweets and emails, too, about, hey, I got 38-1. I got 32-1. I should... I wouldn't hedge. It's difficult.
Yeah.
You don't know. You could get...
Oh,
this could blow up in your face.
It's like
you
a golf
no
tournament.
Idea. Yeah, you can't.
It's like when you have seven golfers on a Sunday within two strokes. So who are you going to hedge on?
Yeah.
You can't.
But my big point is, maximum, we have four games left of the season. How much could really happen to drastically change this?
Well, Bob, if he shuts him out two times in a row to close out the series, then that's going to change things.
Yeah.
I mean, if they win in five games and he finishes the year with two shutouts, there you go.
How about from Edmonton's standpoint?
I'll just get back into it. And
someone could overtake McDavid, though? I can't see
that. What if Draisaitl has a hat trick in game four?
I got that.
You can't forget what happened there with him in game one.
But then Connor's involved, though, too. I mean, Connor's probably going to set him up then. But, you know, we also got great tweets and emails, ftm@vsin.com, about get off Draisaitl. Or play the props under now.
I know.
The adjustments they made, and he couldn't even get a shot on goal. And what happened?
Let me pay off the tease here in 1 minute. It's books are begging us to bet him tonight. It's this Nats game against the Mets with Mackenzie Gore. He's 11-2 over his K prop on the year. 6.5 was even money. And his recent results, 7, 8, 9, 9, 7, 9 Ks. He's at 2 games of 13. The problem here is the Mets are really good against lefties. And if you go look back at last year, he only went over this number with 8 Ks in one of the games. He finished with 2-4 in the other two games. But I think this guy's a different pitcher than last year.
Mm-hmm.
He's turning into one of the best guys in the entire sport. So on principle alone, I had to bet some 6.5 over there at even money with him. 12.9 Ks per nine, Paulie. I thought for sure it was going to be 7.5 against this team.
Yep. And your big boy, Max Fried, after a Yankees loss, 6-0 with an 0.57 ERA and 10 starts. And he goes against Cameron as he tries to do it for the sixth straight time, 6-plus innings, one earned run or fewer allowed.
Wes Reynolds on the program coming up. He'll be at Gainbridge Fieldhouse in Indianapolis tomorrow night for Game 3 of the NBA Finals. What bets will he have in pocket while in attendance?